What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and today joining me on the scene, live from, Eno is just, I'm just noticing that Eno is unfurling his mic as we speak.
I'm ready.
And I gotta mention here, like, Eno is doing such a service to everyone listening. It's been, you know, he's been doing so much stuff at spring training, trying to find time to do this. He even sent me a text being like, I want to record. I just have no idea when and where.
Yeah. I'm in a, Guardians radio room, which apparently is not being used today. So
amazing. Well, you know, thanks so much for joining me today to talk about the, just pitchers in general. And I figure, of course, this is what we're going to do in the spring here is, there are all these new things that happen every week. Guys are popping up and doing these fun things. And it's funny, the guys that I already know, the guys you want to mention, because I just kind of loosely mentioned them. I'm like, oh yeah, those are my guys. So let's talk about the first one you have here. You're just trying to load some video, I think, of them. Who is that?
Well, I got my first run of spring training stuff plus. Mm-hmm. And I kind of ran to check out Tyler McGill because there's a bunch of sort of hype around him this spring. And, you know, the good news is that the fastball is up in velo, and that comes through in the stuff plus. And it's got a 105 stuff plus on the fastball so far. So, that's the good news. The bad news is that no other pitch that he throws is currently registering as being a great out pitch. And so, you know, I think it's a mixed bag for him.
Yeah. So I have some more bad news, you know.
What was that?
Yesterday's game, because he was up in velo a lot, it was like close to like 95, 96. He dropped down to 94.1 on his four seamer yesterday, which is under what he was last year.
And it's the same kind of story that he had last year, where he had these, like, you know, great velo bumps at times where you said, okay, this is exciting. And then it just sort of disappeared.
Yeah. It's a, I want to be in. Like, I literally have a shirt, guys, that's Tylord McGill. Okay? That was after his opening day start, because the ground was hurt in 2022, and he was pumping 99 past Juan Soto, and how could you not be hyped by that?
Yeah.
Sadly, the path for, like, Tylord McGill to exist again is having an out pitch, which we hope is the American spork, as he calls it. But that wasn't good yesterday. It was 3-for-5 whiffs, but none of them were, like, well spotted down. Or it's like the absolute opposite of Senga's, which is all low and all McGill's are up. And the command of the four seamer wasn't good either. And it's
that's the 66th location plus on the split finger. Wow.
Oh boy.
Well, you know, I try not to look too hard at those, because you're supposed to have hundreds of pitches for locations. But it is interesting to think that, like, you know, in some ways he's a one pitch pitcher.
Right. Like, I want him to be like a Bailey Ober almost, you know, just paint the top of the zone red and then you have a splitter and then you have a cutter. Right. And I guess it's more Tyler Malley. I don't know. But, like, Tyler McGill doesn't have the same extension. I don't think. Does he have the same IVB or the same vert? You know, the rise on that four seamer. I don't think so. I want it to work. And the new cutter does look interesting as a helpful strike pitch. I'm currently hesitant. And yes, I'm thinking about you, Frank Stanfill, for taking Tyler McGill in the reserve rounds of your NL only labor. How dare you? You picked the wrong one.
Okay? Yeah. I was, having a one thing that, you know, one reason I think that he's interesting and, that the Mets keep giving him chances, whereas, you know, his brother has, you know, moved to the pen and is an exciting reliever. And I think Tyler can get there too.
Right.
Is that he's, he's got an interesting set of like he has a 7.3 foot extension.
Oh, know? He does. So yeah. McGill does.
He has great extension.
Oh, fantastic.
And then this sort of 6 foot vertical release point, which, you know, it's there's a mixed bag there. I was talking with a pitching coach last night about, you know, what types of fastballs are the hardest to build off of. I don't think this is, I don't think McGill counts as that, you know,
yeah.
I don't, he doesn't have great vert. It's a 14.7, but it's
no, that's two, not good.
It's yeah. not good, but it's a two planer. It's got eight inches of horizontal movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some good aspects to it, but the one thing is, you know, we kind of uncovered, what in his opinion was the hardest pitch to build off of, the hardest fastball to build off of. And that was one we've talked about before, Kyle Harrison.
Yeah.
But also Sean Manaea and
like Andrew Heaney or
Andrew Heaney. Yeah. Well done. So it's the low slot, high efficiency.
Mm.
Because if you're low slot and high efficiency, you do create an interesting fastball. And all those guys, Haney, Harrison, and Manaea, their best pitches are fastball.
Right.
What happens, though, and the reason that's a good pitch is because it comes out from like a sinker slot, and people think sinker, but then it's high spin efficiency, so it has more ride than a sinker normally does. That type of pitch is... hard to build off of because you're a high spin efficiency guy. If I give you a changeup, like what's that going to look like?
Right.
You know, you're definitely not killing the spin or killing the velo on that thing. You're in a weird slot for a traditional splitter. You could maybe do some sort of Foch curled finger, you know, Foch variation of a split finger, but
right.
It's not a great place for a splitter. Sure. And then for a cutter, you end up, if you're too spin efficient on a cutters and gyro sliders live off of inefficiency. Cutters and gyro sliders want to be inefficient and not turn all the spin into movement. Because if they turned all the spin into movement, they would be curveballs or, you know what I mean? Like they would be deeper,
yeah,
they'd be
yeah.
bigger movement. These are supposed to be small movement. And so they have a lot of what you call gyro spin, which is
right.
a spin that doesn't contribute to movement. And so, you know, you keep giving somebody like Tyler McGill with the 1 o'clock spin axis and the up and down velo, you just keep giving him tries because it's easier to sort of dream off of it and build off of it.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but did I just hear like Tyler McGill as in like wiggle?
McGill, I said.
Maybe. Okay. I'm sure I heard it wrong. I just love the idea of it being
put
Miggle.
Some wiggle and Miggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has some wiggle though. The yeah, changeup is horizontal. There. Yeah. The fastball is too plain. Yeah. So I don't know. I count him as, you know, somebody who has a chance to be good and has probably opportunity right now. And somebody you should pick up, but not in a place where you need to be dependent on him.
Yeah. I see it like NL only, right? Like,
or even in like a 15 team, if like it's your last pitcher and you want somebody that right. could have some upside. I mean, the upside is he is so good that when Senga comes back, Hauser goes to the pen.
Yeah.
That's the idea. Right. But you also have David Peterson coming back at some point, and you kind of assume that David Peterson's going to get there. And then you have this idea that McGill has had issues maintaining velo. And so there is an open question of, you know, what happens if you give him 180 innings or 150 yeah. innings? You know?
I mean, it does seem like he can max it better as a bullpen piece, right?
I mean, I kind of think he's headed there, but... you know, if you just look at the velocity graphs for last year, you know, they're kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, over his career, he's sat as high as 97.
Right.
And
it was so fun.
And as low as 93.9, 94, which is average velo now. And I don't think he has such an exciting fastball that that it'll survive velocity loss. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as hard of a fastball to build off of as some people's, like Kyle Harrison's, and it, but it's also not like a Taj Bradley fastball where, you know, you're super excited that at least the fastball is elite and you can work off of that.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like he has, I mean, even as you mentioned it, like he doesn't really have the stuff that you really want at the moment. At least it consistently with the heater too. And by the way, I don't know if you saw this. We have our beta of PLV Stuff Plus now.
Nice.
And I've even told Kyle to be like, Kyle, we want it to be, you know, along like able to, for us to compare a little bit. So as far as scaling goes, to be like, yeah, we want it to be not like this different reference point. So we'll be rolling that out at some point this year. And awesome. If you bug us enough, we will absolutely give you some things. but yeah, that's a fun thing. But Tyler McGill as a whole, you're absolutely right that he should have this. This is his spot. I mean, Jose Budo has looked a little bit better from my understanding. I'm not too thrilled about him, but I would think that the Mets have him higher than Lucchesi. And if McGill doesn't really look that sharp and Budo for some reason is just killing it again the next couple weeks, there is a chance that it's not McGill's, but it should be his. Hopefully he gets it into gear. It's fine because I think honestly the cutter slider looking better as it is a savior for him at the moment, just to get strikes that aren't terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can find the American spork actually like getting it down finally, because it's only really been like two games I've really seen it so far.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the splitter is a pretty true field pitch. I mean,
right.
I just talked to Jordan Hicks on what day was it? Monday. about, you know, his coming season. And he was like, well, you know, last year was really the first year I threw the splitter regularly.
Yeah.
And so he was like, you know, by the end of the season, I felt way better with it. So he feels like, you know, he can command that pitch, and the four seam was kind of new for him last year too. So those are the reasons why the Giants think that, you know, he can manage this transition.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I'm super curious about Hicks. Like, yeah, he's not going to throw upper 90s, 100 or so, but that sinker clearly was just so hard to hit. Maybe that was just because of the velocity, and maybe it's easier to hit when it's coming in at 95, 96 or something like that. But I'm just wondering what else he has that he can constantly throw for strikes. I mean, was he finding something else in there?
He has nothing that he can do. I mean, the sweeper is hard to throw for strikes. You know, he is. So, you know, he said the four seam when I asked him, because I obviously was like, we have to talk about throwing strikes.
Right.
And he said, yeah, the four seam is the one that I can throw for strikes. You know, but we also talked about, like, you know, what do you do with the sinker against lefties?
Yeah.
And he was like, and this is true. You know, I just have to throw it low. What's interesting is that the heat map disagrees with what he said.
You're all about the high sinker now too.
Yeah, and I guess he doesn't throw high sinkers. He throws some like thigh high sort of.
Yeah, those are terrible.
Those are not good. And then the good ones, I guess, he throws some sinkers front door, so down and into lefties.
Which is really interesting because that's a terribly hard thing to do consistently.
And it's not a guy who has great command, so you're
right.
Like, surprised that that's a thing for him. He doesn't actually throw it a load away. I guess nobody really does that, and he doesn't either. But Sperman he did say that
the only one I can think of
the mechanics. Well, and he has like, you know, one of the true sinkers of the game.
Yeah.
But Hicks said that the mechanics of trying to throw the high, he just wasn't sure that it would look the same.
Mm.
His sinker would even look the same. He threw it high. And we know that that's a case, is like that pitch movements are different to different locations.
Right.
And what you hear is sometimes a disconnect between what the heat maps are saying and what the player can do. I mean, like the high slider to righties is something that I laugh about with pitching coaches, and Trevor May was laughing about it. And it's, you throw a right on right slider where you have to throw the slider at the hitter's face.
Yep.
Like, yeah. How often has a pitcher practiced that?
We actually, it's funny, we did this with PLV, being like, all right, we're trying to showcase it that we can have heat maps for each element of PLV, right? So what we do to make it is we say, cool, you throw a pitch. What is the percentage that this is a called strike, a swing strike, a hit, the damage on it? We just have probabilities across the board based on the pitch. And it's so interesting to see the heat maps of called strikes for sliders inside to right-handers, like righty and righty. I got this from Kyle. And yeah, it is a high called strike probability.
Yeah, because they're not going to swing at something that's coming at their face.
Right. But there's also like, we also have compared to like certain results of it. And it's just like, well, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they actually stay in on this and then they crush it.
Oh, really?
And well, I mean, think about this. This is like in that absolute zone of a softer pitch inside that you can just turn on and demolish. You know, if think about like a soft, it's effectively a soft fastball in the same spot, right? It's just their timing on it. And when it comes in front door, it's going into the barrel. It's like going straight back toward the barrel for you. So yeah. if you're
sitting
like
the high sinker too, right? Like it's
right.
It's like coming back to the hitting zone.
But it's exactly. But it's also softer. So if they're already sitting softer, and they're like, cool, I know this is going to be a slider that comes back, and it's not going to hit me in the face, and they're right. ready for that. Oh my gosh, this thing gets launched.
It's like so one of those things that like works. Like,
risk reward isn't quite even enough.
And it also is like one of those things that just like it only works if it's not in the scouting report.
Yeah, well, right. Yeah, that's a great point, too.
If you keep doing it, they'll be like, oh, hey, I know what this is.
Yeah. I remember...
they warned me about this.
I remember a distinct game when I was like a 10th grader, a travel team, where my catcher realized I threw like a front door curve. And at the time, like it was really slurvy motion, but curve with horizontal break to it. And every batter always flinched. Always flinched. So I just literally threw, I think it was like 15 in a row. I threw the same exact pitch to every single batter.
That's funny.
And none of them could hit it because none of them had the discipline to like stay in. And one guy did once, it was like and he fouled it down the line. So I just threw a fastball in the same spot. And then he just took that one. I was like, oh, dang. Okay. And then I went back to it again. Like if you can find a groove for it, it can be very effective. But also that was with high schoolers.
Yeah, they're not the pros.
Like it can be fun, but then became the scouting report. Then it's like easier to do, right? And that's a really good point of it. It needs to be a surprise. So it can work in the show, guys, but not really in the majors much. It's not really a thing you should lean on.
I've got a little visualization tool for Stuff Plus too, and I just stuck in Tyler Megill, and it's pretty close to dead zone actually. So I think that's why the velo matters so much.
And the extension is a huge thing. I mean, that's an eye opener for me a bit. I didn't really put together that Megill had that, which can be a difference maker. Cause even like Gavin Williams, it is lower of an arm angle that helps him, but it's not the most ridiculous vert. And that kind of made me a little more hesitant on Gavin, but I think because he has a good enough,
who's this? Angle, Gavin Williams,
but I call him an extension boy, but then again, I should just be a stretch Armstrong, but no one understands that one. So I just go back to extension boy.
Gavin Williams.
Where were we at there?
7.4, 7.5.
Yeah, he's ridiculous with it.
Yeah, but what's nice about him, though, if I'm right, is that the two-plane movement is not dead zone for him.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely not. But like when I see, I'm seeing all the vert numbers, right? The vertical break on these four seamers, it's usually like, I want to see, for me to get amped about it. Like, there are different levels of what is a quality fast one, what's a detrimental one, what is like going to be good enough, and what is going to overpower and bully. I need to see at least 16.5, if not flirting with 17, for me to be like, oh man, that's a vert that's going to do amazing things. 16 yeah. is like, okay, this is fine, that's good.
Gavin would jump from blue to red on my on my heat map if he would get one more inch of vert.
Right, where is he now though? Is he like at 16 or something?
Yeah,
right. And then his horizontal adjusted height adjusted VA was like 1, if I remember correctly, which is fine. Again, it's not hurting him, but it's not like the 1.2, the 1.4 that I see of, oh man, that is going to explode at the top, right? I don't know what yours is for that. I can actually bring that up pretty quickly. It's on our player pages, everyone, by the way. If you just go to the stuff tab of the repertoire section on the Pitcherless player pages, you will see height adjusted VAA. And for us, for Gavin Williams, yeah, it's right at 1. So, but it's an amazing extension in 95, 96. And that's kind of, and because those are average and those are elite, then it's fine. I'm cool. We're great. Nothing's pulling it down. Right. So it's just kind of how I'm thinking about four seamers. I just hope that Gavin Williams all of a sudden has something extra more to really take him over the hump. I want to move on to the second pitcher. I've got one that absolutely shocked me. I'm curious what you have pulled up. We're going to talk about him after this break. So the talk of the town to me from yesterday, this is just from Tuesday's games. I mean, this must have shocked you too. I did 400 pitchers, you know. I ranked my top 400, and it's only March 6th before there's another guy that I did not rank that matters. It drives me.
Yeah, I had to hurry up and put AJ Puck back in. I was like,
no, I had Puck there at like 120 or something, but it's Suarez. It's Albert Suarez. Who's this guy? Like, what? This is what I literally think happened. The Orioles are like, okay, we got Bradish, we've got, you know, Means, we're all set for a rotation. Like, maybe, sure, maybe some Cade Povich, some Justin Armbruster, some Chase McDermott, I don't know. But we're fine, guys. And then, oh no, these guys go down. What's going to happen? Okay, well, Tyler Wells, fine, Dean Kramer, but okay. Oh, Cole Irvin's looking good. We're fine. And then they're just like, looking through the backfield, like, all right, who else do we got here?
Is and anybody back this here?
Dude, that's like, was throwing 93 and change before. Is all of a sudden throwing 96 to 97. And everyone's going, oh my God, look at Suarez. Oh my God, Suarez. Look at Suarez. And they go, all right, let's just give him a shot, whatever. They throw him in there. And he went 10 for 28 whiffs on his four-seamer. This is against the Phillies. I watched this. Suarez, his mechanics are great. Like, I normally see these velocity jumps on a guy, and what I think is all of a sudden they're doing max effort. They're suddenly flattening their back on release so much that they're selling out for extension. They're selling out for as much velocity and effort as they can at the cost of command. And you don't know where this thing is going because it's just like, let's just thrust my body as far forward as possible, and I don't know when it's going to release out of my arm or whatever. That is not the case. He was so clean and quiet in his delivery. I love it so much. It's straight. It's you watch this entire game.
26 fastballs out of 34 pitches.
26. Yeah, he threw a ton of heaters here. 28, I think. Maybe it was 26. Maybe it was 10 over 26 then.
And are these being misclassified as two different, or do you think there was a sinker and a four-seam?
I thought it was all four-seamers, but I mean, I could be wrong. It was, I guess what I'm getting at is like his arsenal. Sure. The cutter maybe needs a little bit more refinement. There are times it came out too high on out of his hand. He didn't really stay out in front. It's actually something I've been thinking about, and I would love for you to ask somebody about it because I've never heard it. And I was just thinking about it myself of palm placement or the bottom of the, like where the wrist is on release of like on a four seamer, you want to stay behind like your palm forward, but then on a changeup, you want your palm back. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're focused on, you know, that bottom wrist forward on, as you release it. But then on like a cutter or a slider, you want it pulled back and then your palm down, right? Mm. And actually, subconsciously, I never really thought that way. But when I thought of going out, that's what I was doing. and then wanted to stay back, I would do the other, right?
Stay back, yeah. When
right.
Stay back is your hand just naturally.
Yeah, pushing out with the bottom of your palm and like your wrists, and then getting on top, and then you pull your wrist back. I'm curious, like, if there's, you know, if there's any thought of that. That's just something that popped in my head last week.
The breaking balls at all? Like, I mean, Alex Fast was like, you know, dueling over the.
Well, it's an Orioles guy too.
Sending me stuff. Yeah.
It's funny you say Alex Fast, because I watching this was like, well, he's not doing the flat back stuff. So what is his extension? Is it actually good? Because there's something to be said about him throwing 96, 97. Fine. We've seen that in guys go like 1-for-20 whiffs. He did have good location. It wasn't the greatest, but it was good enough that would help with them. But 10 whiffs, like, clearly there's something about the shape of this, or, you know, part of the Fantastic Four that I talk about that is exceptional, and where we know the velocity, but what's the other stuff? So Fast sent me that his extension was 6.7, which normally I'd say average, it was like, okay, I don't really care, is like 6.4 and below. That's actually league average is around 6.4. And underneath that is then it's hurting you. 6.7 is not hurting you. That's actually like fine. Velocity, okay, we're cool. His vert was 16.3, which, if we just go back to the Gavin Williams conversation, again, not exceptional, but...
But the horizontal fine. Was exceptional, right?
I don't have a horizontal.
He was telling me 15 inches horizontal.
That sounds great.
Yeah, that's
a
lot.
That sounds really good. So that's two plane.
Yeah.
And... Now I see
and like way more two plane than like, you know, the other guys we've been talking about. Like,
so that might be why the mixed classification of sinker that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then the vertical release. Now, I've never seen it phrased like that. Like, I just see it as VAA or like a height adjusted VAA. Fast has his vertical release as 6.43, which is high, as opposed to the league average of 5.82. Which would suggest to me that he has detrimental height adjusted VAA. But I don't know. Like, I watched this and I just thought, oh, this guy is commanding this. He's calm and like quiet and good in like the release and is comfortable. And what I mean by that is like in at bats, when he misses, it's not like a big miss or something. It's just, oh, it's just a little bit over here, a little bit over there. Like, this is a guy who I trust when he's going to throw something, is going to generally execute that. I love it. I don't know. I'm kind of digging it. I imagine, sure, give me some more polish on the secondaries, like the more consistency with the cutter. And it was a good looking hook, but he didn't really nail it.
It's so out of nowhere. I mean,
I know that
some of the backstory is that he got it in the offseason. So he didn't even get it, you know, in these places where he has stats, because
right
his last you know, he was in Samsung in the KBO, he had a 3.92 ERA and a 1.5 whip.
This is my favorite stuff, by the way.
Like, and like, he went to Caracas, you know, where he's 5 years older than the average player, and he got a 3.79 ERA and a 1.4 whip. I'm just here to rein in the
enthusiasm. Oh no, I understand. I don't actually expect them to start right away.
And the Stuff Plus model does not like his secondary. It's just
not surprised.
You know, maybe the slider's average. And then also, like, does he really have opportunity?
That's the bullpen, I don't think
probably.
So.
I think that,
well, the thing is, they Wells pushed him
moving
to
the rotation. Yeah, I know. I saw that and I was like, okay, so he's a candidate to start. Maybe if Means can't start the season.
Well, he's not. Yeah, May 1st.
Okay, so if Means is not starting the season and Bradish is not starting the season, Irvin and Wells.
Yeah.
So maybe Suarez makes the team as a sixth starter who's on the roster.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, again,
does
this
somebody
is
like him have options? I don't even know how it works.
I have no idea.
When you're 33 and like you'd never had any major league experience, I suppose they have options on it.
I don't know.
No?
Yeah. Or maybe it's as a free agent and it's
he must be a major league. He must be a major league free agent. Minor league free agent?
So I guess what I'm getting at with Suarez is I like his mechanics. He clearly has a good fastball. It's only 3 innings. And I can't tell you that this is who he is forever now. This is like the smallest of sample sizes. What is good is I do think that the mechanics do speak to not being.
Oh, he does have 115 major league innings.
A ton of walks.
No options.
That Statcast had like some comparison at least. So I was looking
at the wrong Suarez.
Oh.
And it had no information. This one says on Fangraphs says 0 options. 1 year of service time, 0 options.
Okay.
So this is important. There's an MLB trade rumors thread on this. It's just all the players who are out of options. And if you're playing the are they going to make the opening day roster game?
He would make it or get designated for assignment then, right?
Right. And if their model is excited about it, they're going to find a way to stash him on that roster.
That's wild. Yeah, I mean, so. The way I see it is, okay, cool. We wait 5 days and see what the heck happens. You know?
Oh, yeah. We definitely need more information. But somebody like Keegan Aiken, sorry, you have one minor league option and we want to see a little bit more of Suarez, or even Brian Baker. Sorry, dude, we're going to use that option. I would think that they were better pitchers, but, if you want to check him out for longer, then that's what you do, especially if he has more length. I mean, Dylan Tate, Keegan Aiken at this point, I don't think has that length. He did at one point, but last year was 23 innings and 24 starts. It's not like he's pitched so well last year that he has a definite roster spot. Those are examples of guys that might make the team over Suarez if they pitched well and didn't have any options, but Suarez doesn't have those options. So
yeah, I mean,
him in that pen.
I guess what I wanted to do is just say, hey, here's someone who just appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah.
We don't really know what is going on and what
can we do on the smallest of samples.
Right. There is information to gather from it. And for me, it's okay. This is what his mechanics are. And does that speak to 0 walks over 3 innings? I kind of think so.
Mm.
The four seamer doesn't seem like
his history is not good when it comes to walks.
It's, actually I saw a comment about someone pushing back on Reagan's because, how can you possibly like a guy after a few months with such a history of mediocrity? Which I thought was such a silly, I don't know. I didn't like that comment because I'm like, well, I'm very much of someone who will change on a dime if I feel that they are a different skill set. There is, there's obviously, okay, are they performing at the same level and having different stats? And of course, I'm going to.
I don't know what the history of mediocrity is.
If right. And also, like, Cole Reagan's.
That's 1 year. If they want
and
to.
And also
at
the injury
the
stuff.
Minors, there's plenty of seasons with 33% strikeout rates. That is not mediocre.
But the real point of that for me was it doesn't always matter to me what they did last year as much, especially on the very bottom. When we're talking about like the top 20, it does. When we're talking about someone outside the top 100 who's just trying to maybe even make a team or something, I care about, look, right now, are you showing me a skill? It's kind of like Max Evo, EV or something. Mm. Like, are you showing something that actually could be an element that is good, finally? Obviously, Suarez just did. Now, is that in any way believable yet? Probably not. We need to see more from the secondaries. We need to see what the Orioles actually do with this and more over 3 innings. And are they going to continue to throw him at 3 or 4 innings? And how are they going to utilize him? But we can say, hey, he has decent extension. He has decent velocity, decent vert on the four seamer. I think good command. That's interesting. And hopefully all the signs from before are not going to show itself when we see a larger sample. So that's just a fun. This is like one of the most fun parts of spring training to me is who is the guy that shows up? And
who's
I feel like
33-year-old overweight dude.
Yeah,
just
right.
Came from Samsung and is throwing.
It's so great.
Like, what is happening here?
Amazing. And I do want to mention, I know like last year, this is like the Reed Detmers and the Matt Brash and the Dylan Dodd and Jared Schuster's of before and everything. We have more information now. And I'm also, I think, better equipped at analyzing this stuff with like pitch shapes as well than I was previously. Like I didn't understand that Matt Brash's fastball wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. And also I in the past overvalued stuff over just, yeah, Matt Brash just throws it down the middle and hopes for the best. Mm-hmm. And like, I personally should have recognized that as his volatility.
There's also team dynamics involved in the Brash one. I think that's fantastic, a little separate because they have been developing so many pitchers, starting pitchers, that there became a decision point for him. I mean, you saw these off-season videos of him adding a cutter and a sinker. Mm. And the idea, why do you add a cutter and a sinker to a reliever's repertoire, is to make him a starter.
Right, right.
And in the end, it didn't work out, maybe because the other guys that they developed ended up being so good.
Yeah.
Or because Brash himself was like, man, I need to stay on this roster. I don't want to go back down is a really strong motivator. And so I kind of see Brash as a little bit separate from those other ones. I think a lot of those other ones, you know, I think that an example of those other ones this year, it could be Smith Shauver. I'm a little bit wrong. I guess his four seam fastball stuff plus is 122 this spring.
Well, because he's upped it by like three ticks, and he's always been an IVB guy. And so he gets a ton of rise on that fastball.
Maybe Mayo is like a better example because the shape's not good. All extension and velo.
Right.
So
looking back, like Reed Detmers, not a good four seamer shape at all.
Yes, and amazingly, I don't know if this is actually amazing, but all the fastballs on the Angels bat.
You said amazingly, yeah.
not amazing, I guess. But like, you know, some of them throw 94, 95, and you're like, you know, Canning's fastball can't be that bad. It is.
It's really bad.
This is a scouting fail, I think.
I think the hardest thing to change is
the fastball.
You know, I remember talking
to Eric. Thing to change is the advert change the slot on the fastball. That's your delivery.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's your basis.
Right. Eric Loggenhagen, I think, was saying to me, he made a great point being like, you know, I wonder if the worst thing that happened to scouting was velocity guns. And I just thought that was a fun quote. He was just kind of, you know, just to have the sake of discussion. But yeah, you see like 96, 97. I mean, it's what I've done in the past a ton is saying, oh man, Wasker, no, you throw like 96. Oh my gosh, this is great. But that's such a hittable fastball, you know, and it gets destroyed.
Yeah, I asked an analytics coach last night, like what he would draft on. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, my fantasy brand is like, this is important for like what, who do you look for? And it's
ranged
in pitchers. And he said they have to have a four seam or a cutter. They just have to.
Yes.
Because we're talking righties mostly, but either way, you need to have a hard pitch that you can throw to opposite hands. So that's the four seam or the cutter.
Yes.
And he was like, they have to have that. And I was surprised because, you know, they come from the stuff plus branch of pitching coaches. They said command. So I think the new thing would be kind of like, you know, shape on those, mm-hmm. especially because you might be drafting a 16-year-old that you could expect to fill out. You can expect to put on weighted balls. You can expect him to grow his fastball velo. What scouts have done is sort of emphasize touching rather than sitting, because that it's almost like the max exit velo where the touching sort of gives you an idea of where you might be able to get them to sit.
Gotcha. Know? Yeah. That makes sense for like earlier on.
Yeah. Early in drafts. Yeah, right. You have to be able to touch 97.
Yeah.
You're not getting drafted if you can't touch 97.
Mm.
And so that's, I think people are like, we'll get him to sit 95. He's sitting 93, 92 in college or whatever. We'll get him to sit 95 with all we can do. But I think that's only the smallest, that's a very small part because we've seen a lot of people throw 93, 94 in the big leagues with meh shape. And like, think about how long it's taken Detmers to become a passable pitcher. Think about how long it's taken Canning to become a passable pitcher. And do you think either of them really has the upside to be an elite pitcher, given fastballs?
Right. No.
And when you're drafting in the first couple of rounds, and if you're thinking about this from a fantasy standpoint, if you're thinking about these things, you want to for it to maybe end up elite.
Right. Absolutely. So, oh, you have to tell me who that guy is, because I obviously agree completely with oh man, that's so right. So we're gonna talk about one more guy from Eno as well. It's maybe a mix of two, because I mean, I brought them up before, like, oh, those are my guys. Okay, cool. So we clearly want to talk more about these guys.
Agree on this guy.
We're gonna talk about them after this break. So, you know, which one do you want to talk about first here? I think it's the guy that the video that you were trying to pull up for.
About Ryan Nelson.
Yes,
we have to talk about Ryan Nelson.
Absolutely.
You know, when we did the rerun of Stuff Plus, the update, his pitch kind of suffered a little. And you know, I've got his fastball was, like, you know, in the old version was a plus pitch. And then let me see what I got here. When we re-ran it, it was all the other Nelsons. Here it goes. It was a 91 Stuff Plus fastball.
When?
Last year.
Oh, okay.
And then this spring, you know, what is the deal this spring? We added velo?
He added a tick. He's shown at times 2+. Like, so last year, Ryan Nelson was about 94 and change. Mm-hmm. He's sitting 95 right now. And
the shorter outings?
It's possible. I mean, what's happening right now is, like, I remember seeing a first inning where he was 96 to 98, and it was just, oh, my heart. And then I comes down the next one, and he's like 93, 94, but then gets back up to 95, 96. And in yesterday's game, that is on March 5th, velocity was higher and then come down to like 93, 94 for like a couple, and then go back up. And his last three fastballs were all around like 96 plus. So that was like a 3-inning start, I think it was. And I'm encouraged that he's getting there.
Yeah, it's good he's getting there, but he also throws so many of them. Maybe there's it's the Lance Lynn approach a little bit. You know, and I'm talking about good Lance Lynn.
Not what we're seeing this year.
Well, just seeing, like, you know, maybe there's like a sneaky two fastballs in there where, like, one is actually designed to be like 4 miles an hour slower.
Sure. Like the layoff fastball, I actually used to throw that my senior year of high school.
Yeah. The people call it the BP fastball. You know, maybe it's to either command it or it's just to give them a totally different look. Maybe they'll get early on it and, you know, and foul it off and get an extra strike. So, he does show touch with the four seam, and the four seam is not terrible shape. And it's definitely he's not a bad fastball guy.
Oh, no. I actually really like his fastball.
Yeah. I think it's pretty good. The classifications call the slider a cutter this year. And they called it a slider last year. What's the big difference?
Right. I mean, so Hugh has been throwing it at times at like 88, 89. And it does look like the cutter kind. It's like that. It's not the small cutter. It's not the big slider. It's really that middle round that we often see with guys. It's just like a Worthen slider.
You don't want to say it.
Yeah, I don't want to say that. No, I won't do it. it's not as aggressive as Arrieta's. Like, Arrieta's was like a really aggressive.
Let's call it
a
Calder.
Yeah. Calder, beautiful. And it looks really good at times. I mean, that is the two-pitch mix that I think can absolutely soar.
On a two-pitch mix? That was the reason. One of the things we were talking about last night was like the reason the cutter or the four seam are so important is because you just need to have two pitches that you can throw for action and for called strikes against both hands.
Yep.
And so he's almost intimating that like a four seam cutter guy could be fine.
Yeah.
Because he has two pitches that he can throw against both sides.
I mean, look, it sounds ridiculous.
It seems like DeGrom, it's just two pitches.
DeGrom is
a two-pitch pitcher. Yeah.
Right? I mean, he could be a four-pitch pitcher. He's just like, why would I do that? These two are just the best.
Yeah.
You know, and I know obviously he's a two-pitch pitcher because his two pitches are the most elites of the elites, but the essence of it is true of DeGrom throws a slider in the same spot for both lefties and righties. And then with his four seamer, he actually generally goes up and away for the most part for both of them, to opposite sides, and then sometimes goes arms glove side against lefties with that four seamer too. But at its core, that works. And the most important thing to me is if you don't have those elite of elites, you need to be able to go up and down with the cutter. That is, keep it lower against same-handedness and then keep it higher against opposite-handedness a little. Just so that you can actually jam them a little bit more as opposed to getting to the danger zone.
But Taj Bradley throws the low cutter same-handed.
Yeah.
And it gets spanked. And
yeah.
To me, like...
Low and away is okay. Just don't
throw it low. No, it was low and away.
Was it?
I mean, that's where Bradley's throwing it. But to me, I'm not sure that's a great pitch.
Where he's throwing anything?
Huh?
Does Bradley know where he's throwing anything?
Well, I mean, that's the point. But I would say this. It's like, imagine you're a hitter in the box and you're a right-handed hitter and you're used to seeing sliders away.
Yeah.
If you see a cutter away, isn't it just a worse slider? Like, just have less movement than the other ones?
That's a really good point.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, if it's like, it depends really where down away it is. I know it sounds ridiculous, Nick, but if you just do the nine boxes, that bottom and away box is big, you know? If it is like closer to the heart of the plate.
Don't break the nine into more than nine. Come on. They can't do that.
I'm extending it past out of the zone is what I'm doing.
The average miss is 13 inches, man. You're going to make an 18 by 18? What are you talking about?
You know what I mean, though? They're inside the zone. It can be really different.
Let me see here. Slider against righties, 5 minus 8. Okay, so his slider against righties has more horizontal movement.
Oh, that's interesting.
And
this
less
is Ryan Nelson, or is this Bradley?
This is Ryan Nelson. It was last year. So he does, that might just be because he's throwing it to different locations. And so it's having slightly different movement.
Sure.
But that would be, I think, good. I mean, you know that horizontal movement on sliders is why sweepers are so good, same handed. It just keeps going away from you.
Yep.
So maybe he's finding some touch on that breaking ball.
I think that's
really the missing link, because I don't, the change. The change is
no.
It has enough velo difference to be a straight change, but then it has too much movement difference.
Right.
And it doesn't have enough movement difference to be a power change. So I think it's kind of a dead zone changeup.
I'm with you.
There was some research from Harry Pavlidis that you kind of want to be one or the other. You know, so it's 11 miles an hour slower and has a movement differential like 5-6 inches horizontally, I think people can spot it maybe.
Mm.
And then the curve, it's just 76.
Yeah, no, that's not the answer either.
The only thing you can do with a 76 mile an hour curve is called strikes.
Yeah, early.
Yeah.
But
I mean, he can, the curve, I think he can throw those for some called strikes, and that'll help him in his basically two pitch battle, is just to steal some strikes here or there. But I have to be honest, I'm getting a little bit of reliever vibes from both McGill and Nelson the more we talk about them, just because the arsenal is so small. But if I was to pick one of these guys to draft or to think of as a starting pitcher going forward, it's Ryan Nelson. The fastball.
You hear that, Frank? but no, that's Frank Stanfill I'm referring to there, from NL Labor. But what I will say about Ryan Nelson is he's got a couple things over McGill, I mean, that you're talking about here, that makes me at least intrigued that we should be monitoring this a little bit more in spring. One is the fact that he absolutely is locked in this rotation. As far as like shifting to the relief side, McGill makes more sense, because I feel like actually the Mets have more opportunities to fill in that hole that he would fill, while Ryan Nelson is competing against like Tommy Henry and like Slate Sassone and Blake Jarvis, and Sassone, it's like there's nothing else, Christian Mena, and like there's nothing there. So
he has I have a little bit of interest in Sassone.
I don't and Ryan Nelson to me is just, if you are throwing 95-96 with that heater, and he didn't really command it well yesterday, It was in the zone, but it wasn't elevated as it should.
Spring training.
Because his pitch shape last year, velocity wasn't good. It was 94.
Yeah.
But what I'm seeing is over 17
like 18 IVB, right? 17.5.
Yes, 17.3. Yeah. I'm seeing a 1 of height adjusted VAA, and I'm seeing a 6.7 extension. And that extension and VAA are above average. That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like above the mark. But like, okay,
it's basically
that's cool.
Above average in every way.
And well, I mean, the vert is.
But not elite average. In any way.
Sure. 17 plus is like getting there. 18 is like, whoa. But yeah. If you see 17 plus, it's like, okay, no, this has that good rise that should miss bass upstairs. And if you're telling me that also he does it with more velocity now and gets it upstairs actually consistently with a cutter that watching this and observing it should be a very good compliment for him. Mm-hmm. Then I say, okay, maybe there is something here with a good defense behind him, a team that will let him go six innings and an offense that wins enough games, right? That makes it as someone that everyone, I mean, I think the ranks of it are like everyone has him at 800 ADP or something. Like it's just completely ignoring him.
Oh,
something
yeah.
stupid like 600. And I say, well, all right,
draft this works. Like
yeah, this is, that's pitcher. What I see in Ryan Nelson for a guy that's just completely ignored.
Yeah.
But
he's worth taking even as your final curious. Pick in a 15-team league just to see what he
if
looks like.
If he can get that velocity sustainability, I think it's good enough.
Spring training strikeout leaders, Tyler Megill, number one with 13, tied with Spencer Strider with 13.
Who?
Ryan Nelson, number 2/3 with 12.
That's amazing. I mean, is that just three starts for these guys? Is that why?
Yeah, I mean, 8 innings, 9 innings. You got Logan Webb, and then you've got Garrett Whitlock, who I'm begging for pitch level data on him. Like
I know, right? Me
that's
too.
All I want, because his secondaries are good, and I just need to know what his fastball looks like, what the velo's like, because if he can get that fastball to average, he has a chance.
I want that for Tanner Houck as well. The reports of that he's throwing harder than anyone.
Yeah, but like we don't know. And we don't
I want Joe Boyle. Hi, give me actual understanding of his controls. I put in.
I would even take Ryan Weathers because.
Ryan Weathers, we have data on.
Yeah.
And
is anything?
I remember in Florida talking about that he was actually pitching a game on Thursday, and so there was no one interested in that game.
This.
I was like, Ryan Weathers pitched. And Ryan Weathers is like 96.
What? He has a 109 stuff plus on the 4-seam fastball.
Yeah, I'm telling you. This is that's what I'm trying to tell you.
Oh my God, no.
And the slider is actually looking
Marlins
good.
What's it again?
What's on the breaking ball?
102. It's a sweeper.
I'll take
is the changeup good enough? Because it's
a lefty
sweeper.
I don't know if it is.
It could still be a reliever.
But I mean, I think the Marlins are going to.
But now, like a usable reliever as opposed to.
Right. No, but it seems like the way that the Marlins have used Weathers too. I mean, went 4 innings in relief, I think, yesterday.
Yeah, I think he's.
It's him and Puck with Garrett delayed.
Maybe they'll just
not.
Like kind of piggyback Weathers and Puck.
No,
because Garrett is delayed.
Yeah, and then Rogers only went 2 innings pitched. His first game back, and like they're not going to depend on Rogers, right? Max Meyer, I think they delay.
Just because
he's young or whatever, they have other options. Like, why not, right?
He pitched 2 innings and 1 out, and he looked great.
Yeah, he did. Just. Ryan Weathers, hey, you've got this thing. Just use it for whatever you can, and then you get Max Meyer, right?
Yeah, maybe start the season. I mean, I don't want to put Yonny Chirinos in my rotation.
Oh, no, that's not going to.
So if I don't want to put Yonny Chirinos in, there's a battle here. It's between Rogers, Puck.
Weathers, Puck.
Weathers. I'm agreeing that Meyer, I think, starts in the minors. So it's Rogers, Puck, and Weathers for 2 spots.
And Garrett, you could say.
Garrett starting. I think.
Then you have 4. You have Yuri, Lizardo, and.
Skip Schoonmaker says that Garrett will likely begin on the injured list. So you start with Lizardo, Perez, and Cabrera, and then the 4th spot and the 5th spot go to Rogers, Puck, and Weathers. And you know what? Given that you're stretching Puck and Weathers, I think they both make the roster.
I'm with you. Exactly. And then Rogers, does he have an option? Honestly?
I think Rogers makes the rotation too. He does, but I think that he's just he's too established. Huh?
6-man then?
Yeah, no, like Yeah, like piggybacking, like, you know,
say that word. I hate that word.
Weathers jumps in for like three innings. Like, what? How many innings will Rodgers have, you know?
Piggybacking, like, ruined Drew Verhagen, okay? And Daniel Norris. All right? I don't want this.
Piggybacking helped the Giants win 107 wins.
I don't understand how that happened. You're saying it's piggybacking. I don't care. I know.
Huh?
Oh, gosh.
Why do you hate it?
It drives me absolutely bonkers. I have to write this article every day about starters. Sure. And like, I have to do two now for every team. And
that's right.
Oh, my God.
Everybody's like sneaking six starters into their rotation.
Yeah, right. We could do this for a very long time. And I know you got to go. I hope, you know, I'm really excited for that conversation. Talk to Bieber. Yeah. And can you ask how he walked three batters and struck out none last time? Is he okay?
Well, apparently last year, his curveball grip changed without him noticing.
What, it like snuck in at night?
I think that like microscopic changes to grips that you're not aware of. I think
that's a wild thing. I'm sorry. Yeah, I can understand. I just, that concept in my head.
I know it is
like someone's tiptoeing. Like, you know,
who's gripping this ball? What is this?
I understand that of like, hey, somehow I'm just not feeling in the same way that I used to. You know, I totally understand that.
Yeah,
but that's just,
and he had the added cutter usage because his fastball was getting so much worse.
Yeah,
so maybe there was just some blending with his breaking mm-hmm. balls. You're trying to kind of cutterish, sweeperish, curveballish,
right.
You know, it's all like,
is he okay? Like, I think of Bieber and I think of command and everything, and three walks, zero Ks is just kind of like, is everything all right?
I think that, you know, one of the things that's interesting about pitching is like, if you change a lot of things in the off season, I think that it's like almost new body.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. No, like, I can buy that.
Whoa, like, you know, now it's that fast. And like, if it's that fast, it doesn't move as much, or, you know what I mean?
Right.
So like, if it doesn't move as much, then you think, I'm going to throw it here and it's going to end up there.
Right.
But if you're throwing it like two ticks harder, it's like, oh, it didn't go as far.
Right. Like the Christopher Sanchez comment from Robert Orr saying that him adding two ticks to the sinker makes it worse because it's going to have less drop ultimately because it doesn't have enough time to drop.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting. Or maybe in the horizontal movement.
It's still less time to react. I mean, but I think that what I'm arguing is that there might be some sort of command rep.
Well, right.
Issues where you have to sort of relearn it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
About somebody who had like redone, I think maybe Kikuchi,
mm-hmm.
where it's like he like had a totally new arsenal. He didn't have great command to begin with. He had this totally new arsenal, but since he's like really emphasized, Kikuchi's an example of our two pitch pitcher basically that just has the right two pitches.
Interesting. Well, he was
a hard four seam and a hard slider,
but he introduced a curve a ton last year.
Right, but I, you know, the foundation is that.
I got you.
Fastball and hard sliders.
So. Does he mention at all trying to go upstairs more? Because I know he did last year. He like increased his high lock by about 7 points, but still underneath 50%. Wanted to do that. I don't know. Yeah. Well, I'm super curious what you can uncover with Bieber. We have no data there, mm-hmm. We're all like, is he throwing 93, 94 now? Because that's a big thing. And does he still have? Right. Does he have his old curveball back? I hope he does. So that, I'm really looking forward to that. Maybe next time we'll see how Matt Manning and Casey Mize are looking, because those are very interesting guys throwing 95 now too. We'll talk more about that next week. We'll note that one down. But I think that's going to do for this episode of The Craft. You know, have a great time in the spring. You know, I missed you at Florida. I get to see you in 2 weeks, fortunately.
Yeah, that would have been nice to be at, but instead, I am just, I'm always in like a hallway with a team, like stuff on the ground, and I don't really know where I'm going because I've only been to these places like 3, 4, 5 times each.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I'm like, wait, and like sometimes they like redo these things. So then I'm like, left, you know, I'm the what's the thing from Pulp Fiction where he's like looking left and
right?
Oh,
yeah, John Travolta.
John Travolta was like looking left and right. That's me. I'm always like, this way, that way. I know I just came in this door like an hour ago for a clubhouse, but.
And you walk in and the mascots are there. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. So sorry.
walk in, two mascots are going at it. What?
Okay, well, that's not the way. Okay, you know what? Now I know it's time to end the podcast. Eno, can't wait to see you soon. Make sure you guys go to that event. It's going to be in Williamsburg at the Other Half Brewery, not the one in Green Point,
Domino Park,
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It's going to be Wednesday, March 20th. I'll be there. And then Thursday, March 21st again. So definitely go to those events. Can't wait for that. But that is going to do it for this episode. On the behalf of Enosaurus, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft again next week.